Well, plants are not the only hazard for pets in our garden. So today we're going to talk about some of the other problems that we as gardeners need to be aware of. I'm Jill Nadeau. This is Garden Talk on the Larry Mueller Show. And with us is Dr. Sam Bilko. She is a UW School of Veterinary Medicine faculty member and emergency and critical care clinician at UW Veterinary Care. What questions do you have for her about the safety of your pets in your garden? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Dr. Bilko, thank you so much for spending a little time today with us. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
You bet. So you had done an article and I saw it and I'm like, oh my gosh, this will be perfect for Garden Talk because occasionally we have people that call up and say, you know, is this hazardous? And most of the time our guests have no clue because, you know, we're gardeners, not veterinarians. So do you get many problems, many pets coming in with problems because of gardens?
I would say that most of it is ingestion of like mulch or compost or things that might taste good or be new and interesting to dogs as springtime rolls around. Mm-hmm. Less so with like fertilizers and things that are spread on the lawn, but definitely a lot of those woody-based products that dogs like to eat.
They just like to chew on stuff.
They sure do.
Yeah. Is it cats so much or is it mostly dogs?
Cats tend to be a little bit more discriminatory in what they are eating.
They do, don't they? Yeah. Almost too much sometimes. So let's look at that list. The number one on your list was compost. Now, that's a really important thing for gardeners to have. So what is it about compost that's a problem?
Yeah, so compost tends to create a really warm, moist environment that's good for bacteria and certain molds to grow. Mm-hmm. So we can see certain microorganisms that cause tremors, muscle activity, seizure-like activity in dogs when ingested. Okay. We call them tremorgenic mycotoxins. And that can definitely be a reason for your dog to come to the veterinarian because we need to make sure to stop that muscle activity and those seizures and cool the pet down.
How long is it going to take between them eating that and that those kind of symptoms to appear?
It depends on how much they eat, but it can be pretty rapid.
Okay. So that would be pretty easy to pinpoint then? Because I would imagine that's really difficult. You can't ask the dog, obviously, so that the person bringing them in can tell you, I saw them eating at the compost pile.
Yeah, absolutely. They just tend to have these very characteristic spasms that owners will pick up on.
Okay.
And then when you don't recognize that as a normal behavior and you bring your dog to the vet, the veterinarian will know to ask, hey, is there compost out recently that you've been turning? And then you'll be like, yeah, of course. And I've seen the dog over there. So then we can kind of connect the dots.
Okay. And so they should be seen right away.
They should. Yeah.
Okay. Good to know. What's usually your... What do you do to help them?
We give them medication to stop the tremors. If they're having seizures, we give them anti-seizure medications. Mm-hmm. And your body can get really hot and overheat from all that muscle activity. Mm-hmm. So we have to cool them down as well, just to make sure there's no damage to organs.
Okay. So your recommendation is just keep the pet out of that area. Generally,
much as possible, keep them away from the compost pile.
Okay, so fence.
Yes.
Hit a fence. So next on your list is mulch. Mm-hmm. We spread that every year, generally every couple of years. So what's going on with that?
So mostly that is a obstructive type hazard for the GI tract. So, for example, my dog loves when we spread the mulch. She says, oh, so many new sticks that you brought me. And then she starts to chew on it. But I know that if she's going to eat so much, her GI tract is not made to break that down. And so it can cause impactions and obstructions that might potentially require surgery to remove. Mm. And so something that seems like just chewing on a stick, if you eat enough of it, can result in a hefty vet bill. So we definitely want to prevent that from happening. The mulch itself is not so much toxic, except for like cocoa mulches sometimes have chocolate-type toxins in them, and so can cause some of those chocolate toxicity signs. But other than that, it's more of a impaction concern.
Okay. Now, there was probably maybe 10 years ago where there was all kinds of stuff going around about the cocoa mulch, and you can't have it, and it's, you know, it's so bad. And so, how bad is it, and should we not use it at all, or
what is the actual truth behind the cocoa mulch?
I think I would have to look at the percentage of cocoa within the product to be able to say for sure what types of clinical signs a dog would experience. And again, it would depend on the amount ingested and the size of the dog.
Okay.
But the typical signs of methyl xanthine toxicity are going to range from GI upset, kind of the low end of the toxic range, all the way through abnormal neurologic activity like seizures or heart arrhythmia at really high ingestions. Mm-hmm. So those would be the concerns. And then obviously the impaction from it just being mulch on top of that.
And so, and we didn't really talk about that, but the signs of impaction, basically constipation, I'm assuming.
Yeah, profuse vomiting, usually persistent. The dogs often don't want to eat, which in dogs that are eating mulch is generally a pretty big sign because they want to eat anything and everything. A lot of times they can't keep water down when they're trying to drink as well. So I would be concerned if I saw any of those things.
Sure. And that again, get them to the vet right away.
Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. Victoria in Millador emailed us. She wants to know if you use Roundup on some weeds and wait until it dries or even a day or two later, is it okay to let your cats out on the sprayed areas? And what if they eat the sprayed plants after this time?
So most chemicals and pesticides exist in really dilute concentrations when we ultimately spray them on the plant. Mm-hmm. In the bottle, it might be a little bit more concentrated, so we definitely wouldn't want any pets getting directly into the bottle. But once they are diluted, sprayed on your yard or on your plants, they tend to dissipate into the environment pretty quickly. So I would say keeping the animals off of that grass area, off of the plants for a few days at least. For every particular product, it's going to be a little bit different. So definitely looking at that package insert and making sure that you're following any health and safety recommendations according to the label as well is important.
So that has to do with like all the sides. So the herbicides, the fungicides, the pesticides, all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Okay. And I know a lot of people are concerned about the sprays on grasses. I mean, even if they're the neighbor's grass is being sprayed, what kind of concerns should you have for your pets about maybe drift or, you know, them running over to that yard and coming back?
Again, it has to do with the time and the dilution of the product. So once it's applied to a lawn, it tends to be fairly dilute. So we don't see a whole lot of toxicity unless the animal gets into the original concentrated source. But we do recommend, just to be completely safe, to keep pets off of that area of the lawn, away from the neighbor's lawn. If you are concerned about any area bordering the neighbor's lawn that's been sprayed, maybe just temporarily not allowing the dog access to that area just for a few days after the application. Mm-hmm. And then after a few days have passed, it's no longer a risk.
Okay. And then there's fertilizers, another one that we have a lot of in the garden area in our landscape. What should we know about those?
Kind of the same thing. Mm-hmm. Fertilizers, again, are more toxic in the concentrated forms, so just straight from the bag, which not a lot of dogs are eating straight from the bag, of course.
Hopefully not. Yeah,
they can also have really high concentrations of certain, electrolytes and substances that we don't necessarily want the dog ingesting in high quantities, like phosphorus, for example, potassium, those types of things.
Then there are the products that we use to kill other pests. People can go kind of crazy on that too, whether it be mice or other kinds of rodents or what have you. Those are very, very dangerous, obviously.
Absolutely, yeah. So this would be probably my biggest concern is these types of pesticides. And rodents are a big one, of course, but snail baits, molluscicides, those toxins can be very potent in dogs and cats, and they can often cause fatal seizures. And so we really want to make sure to keep any amounts of those pesticides away from our pets.
Mm-hmm. And what about if we do have a mouse or rat or whatever that has eaten it and dies, and our pet then eats that animal, what happens then?
That's a great question. You can ingest enough animal, or mice, shall we say, that has died from ingesting that toxin. If you eat enough mice, then the cat, I would presume, rather than a dog, usually gets intoxicated as well. So there's a little bit of dilution that happens when the mouse eats the toxin, then it's within the entire body of the mouse, and so it's a little bit less concentrated. Mm-hmm. But then the cat eats multiple mice, and eventually they will accumulate enough that they suffer signs too.
Okay, and what would those signs be?
Again, usually seizures, but there are certain mice chemicals that are going to cause like mineralization of the kidneys, of the calcium-based products.
Wow.
They can also cause bleeding. So we have ones that prevent blood from clotting too. Those can be equally dangerous.
Nasty. So when an animal comes in like that, you must not know. So there's got to be a lot of tests that you have to run.
Absolutely. We have several blood tests that we can do to look for each of the most common kinds of mm-hmm. pesticides. And then there are usually hints on the physical exam and the history that can lead us down one path or another. Mm-hmm. There are treatments. So for example, for the bleeding type of rodenticide, there are treatments for the calcium-based ones. There are treatments. There is not really a good treatment for bromethylene-based products, which are the most common types of rodenticides that we're seeing. So it's really important to keep those away. And even if you're putting them in those like little black boxes that people will put outside with the compound in it and thinking mm-hmm. that it keeps it away from the dog or cat, animals are sneaky and they can chew open the capsule or they can get in there anyway. And so we really need to be careful.
Yeah. So don't use poison.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line.
Ideally, yeah.
Just don't use poison. Our guest today is Dr. Sam Bilko. She is a UW School of Veterinary Medicine faculty member and emergency and critical care clinician at UW Veterinary Care. What questions do you have for her about the safety of your pets in your garden? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. And of course, you can send an email. That's talk@wpr.org. Join us again on Monday and Memorial Day. We'll be listening to a couple of interviews that Larry did last year. First, we'll look at the Vietnam War era through its music. And then we'll continue exploring the power of music with the author of the book, I Heard There Was a Secret Chord, Music as a Medicine. And yes, that song is now stuck in your head. I'm very sorry. I've been singing it all day and not very well. But anyway, right now we are talking about your pets in your garden with a veterinarian from the vet school here, Dr. Sam Bilko. And we've got Don in Two Rivers that has a question. Go right ahead, Don.
Hi. I was wondering about ant baits, which we place around buildings, try to keep the ants out. And if a dog would ingest one of those, I know some have borax in them. I don't know the ingredients of all of them.
Yeah, Don, that's a great question. So definitely ant baits can also be toxic to pets. If you're ever concerned that an animal has gotten into it, because as you said, the active ingredient can vary between different types of pesticides, it's really important to take a picture of the packaging or bring the packaging with you to the veterinary office and or use it when you're calling a poison hotline. So there are animal poison hotlines, same as there are for people. And then we can determine using all the data available to us and the specific active ingredient and concentration if we need to be worried about that particular bait.
Okay, great. Thank you for the question, Don. And we do want to let you know that there's two poison pet lines or poison lines for pets, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
The ASPCA Poison Control Center, which is 888-426-4435, or the Pet Poison Helpline, which is 855-764-7661. Two numbers that you probably should have near your, well, on your phone these days. You know, you could probably look them up fairly quickly, but two great ones.
Absolutely.
To have nearby, somewhere where you can get at really quickly. Things happen fast, just like with children. Right?
Absolutely. And it's important to use a pet-specific hotline because what is toxic to dogs and cats is a little bit different than what's toxic to people sometimes. And so to get that that veterinary-specific data, you want to call one of those two numbers.
Absolutely. Jean in Mosini emailed us. She brought home a bag of Milorganite to fertilize some of her areas in her yard. She did not know that dogs are very attracted to it, and her miniature schnauzer chewed a hole in the bag and ate some of it. She still cannot get the spot out of the carpet from where he threw up black Milorganite, and she didn't have to take him to the vet, but she never bought it again. To this day, the smell of it just makes her sick.
Oh, no. Well, I hope that little guy is okay.
Yeah, it sounds like it, but that's a one thing, too, is that you never know what's going to be attracted to certain dogs. But the size of the dog makes a big difference, doesn't it?
Yeah, a lot of toxins are dose-dependent, mm-hmm. and so a smaller dog can eat the same amount as a larger dog, and that smaller dog might experience more profound effects than the larger dog.
Yeah, and I mean, we started talking about some of the things in your yard, but there's, of course, always plants, and a great deal of them are poisonous if you eat them to people and pets. How can we tell?
Yeah, so there's a lot of plants out there with a lot of variable levels of toxicity. The vast majority just have chemical type irritants in them that can cause GI upsets, mm-hmm. Or a little bit of mucous membrane. So that's like the inside of your mouth, irritation. And so sometimes we'll see some hypersalivation, vomiting, diarrhea. Those are just natural protective compounds that plants have within them. But then there are additional plants like lilies, for example, which are definitely growing right now, and that are highly, highly toxic to cats, for example, and can cause kidney failure.
Mm, wow. And most of the time, the pets ignore those, but not always. So
not always,
keep an eye on them.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now there's one something that was just, I know. Speaking of which, pets seem to eat grass a lot, or sometimes, you know, and I don't know why. Why do they eat it, number one? And should we be concerned about it other than they tend to walk inside and then throw up on your rug?
What a great point and a great question. I wish I knew the answer. Okay. I don't know if anybody does. I think I've heard a lot people say, animals eat grass when they're nauseated and they want to make themselves vomit. I've had a lot of pets over the years and they all just like to eat grass. I don't know if it's the water content or being outside or what exactly it is, but it does tend to come up on the carpet a little bit later.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I go to the dog park and, you know, I get my dog, Seamus, gets back in the car and has to throw up. And it's, I don't know how many of my little dog beds I've had to throw out because once it's thrown up on, you can't get it out. It just keeps on smelling.
So. Oh, boy.
Yeah, he's a sweetie. Perry and Oconto, go right ahead.
Yes, I wanted to ask the doctor if she sees any of these plants that would be more like in a prairie or something, like different grass awns and like Canadian rye and things like that that can actually either be inhaled or punctured into the skin. Do you see that in your at the University Hospital at all?
Yeah, Perry, that's a fantastic point. We definitely see grass awns and little plant seeds. Sometimes they're called foxtails. They can kind of wheedle their way into any soft tissue surface of the dog. So you pointed out that they can be inhaled and then they end up in the lungs. They can make their way through skin and get embedded in muscle. I've seen them in virtually every organ system of a dog. And because they're so tiny, they tend to take a long time to find. And all the while, they're causing a lot of irritation and starting an infection. So these dogs will often come in with more vague signs, lethargy, appetite is waning a little bit. Sometimes they have a waxing, waning fever. If it's been inhaled, maybe a little bit of breathing change. But if you're noticing any kind of more prolonged abnormalities in your dog's behavior and you know they've been exposed, maybe they're a hunting dog, maybe they run around in the prairie, it's probably worth getting checked out.
Definitely. That's a really good question. I hadn't thought about that, but yeah, there's always something that's poking me. So I'm assuming there's something poking the dog.
Yeah,
too.
They're sharper than you'd imagine.
Yeah, for sure. A listener emailed us and to ask how concerned should they be about the many toads that live in their garden and yard. They live along the Apple River, so there are many, and their dog is a big hunter.
Oh, man. So the types of toads that are toxic are called bufo toads. We don't have those here in Wisconsin. It's more of a southern thing.
Okay.
Their skin can have cardiac type toxins in it, so it can cause arrhythmias in those dogs, as well as hypersalivation and agitation. Here, again, we don't have those toads, and so we probably won't see those effects, although your dog might have a little bit of stomach upset if it's eating too many.
I used to have a cat that liked to catch the frogs in my pond.
They're hunters, if
anything. They're hunters. Oh, my gosh. We were talking about mushrooms the other day on the show. And should we worry about the mushrooms that are growing in our yards?
Yeah, that's another great point. So there are several types of toxic mushrooms. Some of them can cause more of those muscle tremors like we talked about with the molds, maybe some salivation, diarrhea, wide eyes. Those definitely need to be treated but are not necessarily fatal. And then there are the types of mushrooms that cause a fatal liver failure. So usually these are the Amanita mushrooms that tend to grow in wetter environments, in pine forest type environments. So I am not a fungus expert by any means, but there are resources that you can use online and groups that will identify mushrooms in the field if your dog has ingested them and or bring some with you to your veterinary office.
Okay. And then, of course, the biggie I'm sure you're getting right now, ticks.
Yes, absolutely.
What should we do in our yard to try to take things, the ticks, down, and what can we do, obviously, for our pets so that they're not quite as dangerous for them?
Yeah, because ticks are going to be carried by other animals like deer and rabbits and coming into the yard. There's not always a great way to keep these guys out unless you have a pretty good fence. So using a monthly flea tick product on your dog is going to be the best way. And they also make these for cats as well if you have an indoor-outdoor cat. And so really keeping up with that, especially during the warm months, anytime that the temperature is above freezing, we expect that there is going to be tick exposure. So I would say that's the best way.
Okay. If you have other questions too, more appropriately to ticks and whatnot, we do have our one of our vets that come in and take your other pet questions. That's coming up on Tuesday, so you can save those too. Since we're talking about the garden today, one of the things I've noticed is that dogs in particular, they like to dig, and you never know what they're going to be doing. What are some of the problems that can be caused by digging in the garden, breaking nails and what are some of the other things that we should be concerned about that way?
Yeah, so I guess there's the physical trauma that you mentioned. If they do injure their skin in any way, break any toenails, usually those can be cleaned fairly readily. Broken toenails can be removed. Perhaps the injury is just cleaned out a little bit, maybe bandaged. But there are actually, again, certain types of microorganisms, specifically something called blastomycosis that we have in this area, which is a fungus that can be inhaled into the dog and go into other organ systems and cause some really significant problems. So again, that spore is dug out of the soil usually and then inhaled. So we want to make sure that we are paying attention again to those more chronic signs that I mentioned with the grass awns, the same things we tend to see with blasto.
Okay. Now, people can get that too, though.
Yes.
Right. I think we talked about that not too long ago on the show, too. That's a scary one.
Yeah, it's definitely a difficult disease.
And that tends to be more up north than it is in northern Wisconsin than it is down here, right?
Yes. Okay. It is more up north. However, I have seen people with like potted plants that come back with them or certain bags of dirt that come back with them that then their dogs are exposed, and we assume that's how they got it because the dog doesn't necessarily have a travel history.
Okay.
I tend to not let my dogs be digging in the woods too much. The other association is usually with like bat guano. If there's any exposure of the soil to that in particular, they can get it that way.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Denise and Madison, you've got to go right ahead with your question.
Hi. Dogs, cats ingesting things that are toxic to them and then passing it to humans is my question. If the owner goes to clean up diarrhea or whatever is making the dog or cat sick, is there a danger of transmission to the pet owner in you know, cleaning up what made the dog sick.
Okay, great. Thank you, Denise.
Yeah, thanks for that question. So I would say that with a toxin in particular, it's usually not transmitted via the vomitus or the feces. With infectious diseases, sometimes we can see the infectious organism coming out in the feces, for example. There are specific things that are transmitted from dogs to people, and usually that route involves some kind of ingestion or aerosolization. So as long as you're taking proper precautions, you know, washing your hands and making sure the stuff is away from your face, you shouldn't need to worry about that. With toxins in particular, I would worry even less.
Mm-hmm. Obviously we want to make sure we clean up after our pets. Can that cause a problem as far as diseases for the dogs themselves or people if we don't do a good job of cleaning up after them in the yard?
They can potentially reinfect themselves if there are infectious diseases that are causing the diarrhea. Mm-hmm. So, for example, some viruses or protozoa might be able to live in the environment in the feces until they're picked up.
Okay.
So we do usually try to pick things up pretty regularly, I hope, just to make sure that, one, the yard is clean for our enjoyment,
yes.
And two, to make sure the dogs can't get back into it.
Okay, great. Well, thank you, Dr. Bilko. We really appreciate you coming in and sharing your expertise with us and our fellow gardeners.
Thank you so much.
You bet. We've been speaking with Dr. Sam Bilko. She is a UW School of Veterinary Medicine faculty member and emergency and critical care clinician at UW Veterinary Care. I'm Jill Nadeau in for Larry Mueller today. I want to thank our team, Clara Neipert, Joel Patton-Odd, Lee Rayburn, and Jeff Robbins. Thank you for joining us and enjoy your weekend.